Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is the introductory broadcast of the Rachel Kramer Bustle Online Book Club, and I'm here right now with Rachel and our first guest, Elizabeth Daniels. You guys there?
Yeah,
I'm here.
Okay, great. For all of you that don't know about it yet, what we're doing is an online book club for Rachel, her books, and incorporating a number of the contributors to her anthologies. And it's all done on the Goodreads platform. If you go to goodreads.com, type in Rachel Kramer Bustle, you should be directed to the group there, and you can join. It's a fully public group as opposed to some of the other private pre-pub book clubs that we're doing. And we encourage you to jump on there, take a look at the discussions, and let us know your thoughts. And if you have any questions, we're going to be doing this broadcast once a week and try to include as many people as possible. So if you want to call in, this is a fully live call-in show that's happening right now, unless you're listening to it as an on-demand MP3. The number to call in is 626-414-3413. That's 626-414-3413. And right now I'm going to turn it over to the host of the book club, Rachel Kramer Bustle. Rachel, are you there?
Hi. Hi, everyone. Before I get started talking about Gotta Have It, I wanted to tell you how you can get more information about it. There's a website, gottahaveitbook.wordpress.com. If you go there and go to gottahaveitbook.wordpress.com/about, you can watch the book trailer, which features 17 of the contributors, international contributors, and you can also follow us at Gotta Have It Book on Twitter to get any news about it, because I'm working on some events. Gotta Have It is a book of erotic short stories that are all 1,200 words or less, and there's 69 short stories, and they really range from the playful and kind of humorous to the kinky to just really, there's such a wide range. There's all kinds of sexualities, and the subtitle says 69 stories of sudden sex, and there are definitely a lot of strangers, you know, and new acquaintances getting it on, but there are also couples. And for me as an editor, that was one of the really fun things about working on this book, because normally when I edit an anthology, I can only choose about 20 to 25 stories depending on length. And, you know, that works if the stories are longer, because those are ranging from, say, 2,000 words to 5,000 words. But with this one, I could really play around and include stories that were just different. So I think there's a lot of sort of unusual stuff going on, and humor and just kind of craziness and sexiness, but, you know, some crazy sexiness. So I wanted to introduce Elizabeth Daniels, who's one of the contributors, and her story is called Dining in the Dark. You can find out more about her at elizabethdaniels.com. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there, Rachel.
Hi. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Can you tell people what Dining in the Dark is about? And if you want to read, like, a paragraph or two of it, you can. Or you can make them search it out. I like that it's about food.
All right. How graphic am I allowed to be?
You're allowed to be as graphic. I asked that. I was like, can we curse? Can we? Yeah, you can say anything you want.
You can say whatever you want.
I'd said every woman had her signature sex dish, but I'd never had oral sex from a world-class sex chef. I could have cried from the perfect marriage of ingredients and techniques. Swift, stirring tongue, spicy rubs beneath the meaty head, slow gumdrop sucks on my balls. Delectable. I tried to hold out and savor it as long as I could, but her skill made my cream rise in record time. Almost with regret, I added my own barely stifled refrain to the mating songs around us. Though I was finished, she wasn't. She went over my caucasus, cleaning the last savory traces of creme fraiche from a spoon. Too bad.
Thank you. I like the, you know, the food sex, you know, analogy. And to me, I think they're very connected. If I can ask, what was the inspiration for your story? And yeah, I guess I'll ask that first.
I have to blame my husband in kind of an indirect way. I had actually had plans to kidnap him and take him for a long weekend in New York for his birthday. And while I was doing that, I was, you know, doing the typical Google search and trying to figure out what we could do, not that there wasn't quite a bit to choose from. But I came across one paragraph mention of restaurants that offered dining in the dark. Apparently this is actually done. Not in the way I describe it, as far as I know. But the whole idea is the sensory deprivation thing. You take away the sight, and you're supposed to be paying more attention to what you smell and what you taste. And I, of course, immediately went to the, gee, what else is happening under the table? But at the time, I really couldn't think of anything for it because most of what I could think of seemed pretty obvious. Gee, turn off the lights, everybody goes at each other. And the Christmas before, I should say, I just clipped the paragraph, stuck it in my story files, and pretty much had done with it. But the Christmas before the call came out, I was looking for some dishes for Christmas dinner. We were having my husband's family over. And I stumbled upon a thread. I can't use a site name, right? Or should I use a site name? If I can't, we can just call it a site for epicures. And the discussion was, it was basically a shared discussion among a number of people who'd prepared some less than usual dishes for a bunch of meat and potatoes relatives at holiday dinners, and they had their offerings rejected. Now, most of them were pretty bland, you know, or not bland, but you know, not terribly unusual. It's like a difference between making cranberry chutney instead of canned cranberry sauce. But this one guy on the discussion was just, he was kind of funny. And I mean, I say this with no offense to foodies whatsoever because I love you all. And one of my bucket list things is to actually take a Cordon Bleu course if I can. But this gentleman was upset because his family had rejected a dish which basically nobody would have touched with somebody else's 10-foot pole. I mean, this just did not sound like anything you'd want to serve to your worst enemy. And so, of course, as people usually do in those recipe sites, they started offering him some helpful suggestions as to how he might make the dish a little more approachable. And the gentleman got up on his highest of horses and informed everybody that he didn't need to change anything, that, by golly, he was so good that he could tell the region various artisanal cheeses came from just by the taste of it.
Wow.
And for some reason, when I went back, it was really kind of funny. For some reason, when I went back and I looked at Dining in the Dark and went, I've got a sex foodie here. Maybe I've got something.
I like that. It's funny. I don't get to talk to people that often about how they research or, you know, get inspired for their stories. I know how I do, and I think people who don't write erotica might think, oh, like, ha-ha, like, you have a lot of sex to research erotica. And actually, I think there's just a lot of other things that you have to get the details right if you're going to write about them. I was just looking up cocktails because I don't drink really that often now, but I don't drink super fancy cocktails, and I wanted to have a story where someone's ordering a fancy cocktail. And I kind of love using flowery details from, for lack of a better word, a term, mm-hmm. food porn, you know, stealing like a description that sounds really juicy and then putting it in, you know, or tweaking it. Because I think that adds, you know, it makes it sound, you know, authentic. And I think it's fun to do research. Like, I've found that almost anything can inspire a story, whether it's like an outfit or a news story or something a celebrity is doing. And sometimes when I'm stuck for an idea, I just walk around and I look at headlines or, you know, look at a magazine stand or just poke around online. And I think that's fascinating because, especially because I'm sure this person did not know that he was inspiring your story.
Well, that's why I'm not mentioning the site. I don't want the gentleman recognizing himself, although I don't think you will. But, cocktails. Well, you could do so much with that, especially with all the names and descriptions and appearances. You definitely
did
somewhere.
And food, too. There's a story in here that it's called Eat Me, and it's a hamburger erotica story. And,
love that.
So actually, I wrote that. I have a pseudonym, Marina Saint, and I wasn't sure if I was going to reveal that. I said it at readings. I kind of use her when I had to, you know, edit some stories at the last minute and throw in a few extra, and I had that one around that I had written originally for a call that was about food. So I thought, you know, let me see if that one works, because I knew it was short. And mm-hmm. it's about a pregnant woman who's craving meat, specifically a hamburger, and she's
right.
been, you know, vegan, health food, you know, on that track. And I was partly inspired. I used to be a vegan, and now I'm an omnivore. And you know, I think it's interesting because part of it is also about her husband watching her eat the hamburger and the sensuality of food. And I think those are closely tied together, like food.
Well, it's such a sensual experience. You know, how can you not appreciate one and not the other, you know?
And I think there's also so much, I mean, often there's like a lot of care that goes into making something. So it's all of that. It's like the eating, but also the preparation. And that, I think, is a topic that you could talk about, you know, endlessly, because there's so many different kinds of food and there's so many ways that I think people relate to food, and just so many, you know, it could be like someone who's a foodie or a food snob dating someone who likes fast food or something like that. I think there's a lot of room for exploration of that, you know, as a topic. So I wanted to ask you, did you find trying to write 1,200 words or less challenging or more challenging than, say, writing something longer or easier? Or how did that, the length of the story, sit with you when you were writing?
Overall, I tend to be more of a sprinter, so shorter is typically what I've written more, so it does in some ways tend to be easier. However, that said, that kind of length is very, very hard to do. And I'm sure there were a lot of people who looked at that and said, oh, you know, 1,200 words, I can knock that out, no problem. But you still have to make it something more than just tab A and slot B, or vice versa, or two tab A's, or whatever you want to do. The thing is that you not only have to come up with something that's sensual and quick and grabbing, but something that has enough draw to get people into where they care about what the characters are doing, or something that's intriguing.
I think it can be really challenging to do that in such a short space.
But it was definitely a challenge. I was watching that word count, and I can't tell you how much I chopped out. And it was just these minor things. And really, they were things that the story really didn't need, but stuff that you would just throw in with a slightly longer story just for a little bit of detail. And it was a lot of fun, though. It really was. I thought it was really interesting that Publishers Weekly had done the interview with you when you first came up with the concept for the book.
This is the first time I've done such short stories, and what's interesting is that probably in a normal anthology, unless it were really spectacular, my minimum would be around 1,500 words, because I think that's usually how long people need to really tell a story. But there are a lot of, I mean, all of them to some degree, but some more than others, really tell a story that has a beginning, middle, and end. I mean, most of them do, but I just think it's an interesting concept. And I think that there's probably some people who that is just too short, even though they can appreciate the concept. They want something meatier and more drawn out. And then there's other people who I think like the fact that you can read one of these in 5 minutes. And, you know, you could read several at once. And I liked it because that meant there's more variety and more room to play around. But there's one that I read at a few readings called Misconnection by Tigress Healy that I thought was really fun. And it plays on something that is, you know, in popular culture, like the misconnection section of the newspaper or website. And it's this fantasy, and I also like that aspect of it because it's a fantasy of what this one woman would do if this other woman had noticed her and she's, you know, writing this misconnection. And so, you know, the sex is not actually happening, but it's definitely very hot. But I would imagine that there were some people who found it too much of a challenge, like who might have started a story and then it just went on for too long and they decided to turn it into something longer. I have that trouble sometimes, even with a longer word count. I think it's one of those things that's somewhat unpredictable. I mean, you can set out to write 1,200 or 2,000 or 3,000 word story, and it might take on a life of its own. And I don't think you should sacrifice. Like, if the story is working as a longer piece, I think you should keep writing it and then try to find something else that's shorter. But I will say that I got more submissions for this book than I have for any of the other 37 anthologies that I've edited. Usually I get between 100 and 150 submissions, and I got about 250 for this one. So I think I think it encouraged some people who might think, oh, I don't know if I could write a whole erotica story, to really stretch and write something. And there are a lot of people in here who are new writers to me, who I haven't published before, and who are new to erotica, or just this is their first anthology publication. So that was something else that I was really happy to be able to do with this book. And I'm hoping that it does well, because if it does, then I can probably do another one of similar length. Although, you know, I'm thinking maybe I would go to 1,500 words, because I think that wouldn't, that other 300 words wouldn't make it that much longer, but would give people a little more room. But I was just really impressed that people told such varied stories that really did, at least for me, draw me into the characters. There's one called Consensus, which is a lesbian census taker story that I really love. It's just like, it's hilarious, especially because the census is kind of timely. And it, but it also like has this, you know, sex in the middle of the humor that I really like.
I thought that the short also made, in reading through it, I also thought the short length really made for kind of interesting reading, because it was such quick shift changes. Usually you're seeing longer stories and there's not as much variety, just as you said. But it was kind of neat as a reader to get to see something like that as well.
I'm glad you like that. It's something that I worry, like, they do really range from in style and tone, and I mean, it is a very varied book, and you know, I highly doubt that someone's going to read it and love all 69 of them. I mean, I think they're wonderful, but I think they're just such varied tastes that, you know, maybe you're not going to love all of them, but hopefully, you know, I think everyone has their favorites with an anthology, and I always ask people, and then I'll get such, you know, someone will love this one and someone will love that one and they won't like this one. And, you know, to me, that's kind of the beauty of an anthology, that it does appeal to hopefully a range of people.
I think it's kind of like eating a Hershey's Kiss versus eating the whole Hershey's chocolate bar. You know, there's a time and a place for both since we're talking about food. But I have to say,
I
love the lineup that you had. I mean, I was thrilled, of course, to be included. But when I saw the lineup, I felt like I'd sailed over the transom on that one. I mean, because a lot of the authors that you had are authors I would have bought this anyway.
Thank you.
So many of the authors are ones that I follow. And I also got a chance to find out some new authors whose work that I'm following now. So it was
thank
a really
you.
Great way to get a brief introduction to people. And
I
like that
I
as well.
You know, I try really hard to include authors who I haven't published before, as you know, as well as usually people who I have published before, just because I think that adds a different kind of voice, and it's also a really nice way to encourage people to keep writing. I'm always looking for new writers. I'm going to put a plug in. If you go to rachelkramerbussell.com/submissions.php, I have 3 calls up right now for an erotic romance anthology, Kinky Couples, and for Best Bondage Erotica 2012. And all of those are wide open. I'm reading stuff as it comes in. The deadlines are April 1st for all of them. But, you know, I really want to get those calls out as far and wide as possible. Another thing that this book has that I don't think I've had as much of in my other books is a range of contributors geographically. We have Canada, U.S., Australia, Scotland, and the U.K. And I think that's fun, and that's something you can hear in the accents in the book trailer. That
I
was
like
something else
trailer,
that I really
that
liked.
That was great.
Thank you. I realized, like, because we had so many people, I wanted to include them, and I also just didn't want to, you know, it all to be me. So I really liked hearing people read in their own voices. I enjoy that, and I think you hear it differently when it's the author reading it. They bring something that you might not hear or notice on the page. And I had Kristen Clifford read from her story after 10 years at a live reading in New York City at Blue Stockings, and D.L. King, who's joining us later, also read. And it was really moving to hear her, because that story, after 10 years, is one of the more romantic stories, even though it's also pretty dirty. And it's about a couple who have been together for 10 years and, you know, what their sex life is like. And going back to the issue of variety, I really like it because it's not a story where everything is perfect and awesome. And, you know, I think sometimes people think that erotica means there's no conflict, and that, you know, all of the sex parts anyway have to be, you know, sort of not embellished exactly, but just, you know, tidied up. And she has these moments where she says, you know, I don't like this, or I do, you know, I do like this. And it's this, I think, very realistic portrait of the, you know, push and pull of a long-term relationship. And that was something, that is something that I think when I only have 20 slots to fill, I can't always get those kind of viewpoints in, because ultimately, you know, it is erotica, and the point is to get people off or to get them turned on. But that's a story that really stood out to me because it had this other element going on, this sort of realism and passion and sex and hotness, but also moments where the narrator is kind of saying, you know, this person and I, we love each other, we have good sex, but not every moment of it is, we're not always in sync.
I don't quite understand. And yeah, and that's good for people who read erotica to read too. You know, erotica isn't always perfect, but you can have it with, you know, anytime, any age, with anybody. It doesn't have to be just a glamorous meet and pleasure, to put it nicely.
Yeah, so. No, and I think that sometimes people, I think that you can't really force that. Like, if you're writing about characters who have some sort of conflict, you know, that's okay. I mean, I don't think the whole thing should be dark. You know, for me, it's always a balancing act. Like, if I have 20 or 25 stories, there can be one or two that are a little more dark, you know, and maybe not erotic in the same way as the other ones, as long as, you know, that's balanced with more traditional ones. I mean, something I see a lot, especially in the BDSM anthologies, is people kind of rush to the sex scene and they don't give enough context of you know, why people are there and who they are. And it's not that the writing itself is not good, but if we don't know who the people are, I mean, especially if it's a very intense, kinky scene, it just doesn't quite gel, I find, often. Sometimes you can start in the middle of the sex scene and really, you know, get to the point. But I think you have to be, I think it in general works better to at least give a little bit of context, or to jump into the sex scene and then step back and give a little bit of context.
Again, you have to add some meaning to it, especially you mentioned BDSM. It simply isn't believable. As much as trust is so much of a factor with BDSM especially, you know, you can't really believe that these people are doing it, so you end up not really being able to get into the story.
I find sometimes that, you know, it's not that, say, dialogue. I mean, if someone is talking degradingly to someone else, that might be hot if you've set the scene that person wants that to happen. But if you haven't and you just throw that at a reader, like, I think their first reaction is going to be like, who is that horrible person? And I think it's the job of the author to without writing an essay, like without making it, you know, academic and within the context of the story, to explain what the people are doing and why they're doing it. And, you know, again, that's hard in 1,200 words or less, but, I mean, that's something that's in my story, Manners, that, you know, it's a very intense story. It's a face-slapping story, but the Manners part of it, of the title, is kind of about how, about, I guess, kind of about role-playing in a way. The protagonist, Sheila, is, like having to say thank you to Max, who, while he's slapping her face. And I think it can be a really tricky thing to write about, because you do have to set that context, because if you don't, I mean, certainly people who don't know that much about BDSM are going to be totally confused and probably put off, but even those who do, just, you know, an average erotica reader, say, you have to give them something to draw them in.
Do you want to clarify what that is for the people that aren't savvy to
BDSM?
BDSM,
also known as S&M, it's kind of a catch-all phrase for bondage. I know I'm going to mess this up. Bondage, domination, submission, sadism and masochism, like eroticizing pain, giving and receiving of pain. So something like spanking or bondage or role-playing, those kinds of things. And I think that there are people who think, oh, that's so out there. And I'm not saying, I don't know, I don't have like statistics on how prevalent it is, but I think that there are plenty of people who want to read about those things who don't necessarily practice them themselves. And I think it's very important to write about it in a way that's both realistic and also, you know, people aren't doing things that could get them, you know, injured in real life. Like, I try to make sure that the stories that have those elements are, I guess, responsible, for lack of a better word, that they, you know, are not having someone be tied up and left in an apartment or house for, like, a, you know, left alone and, you know, like, something could be, the house could catch fire or something like that. I mean, I would, if someone sent me something like that and I liked the story, I would ask them to tweak it so that maybe the person thought they were leaving, you know, the person who's tied up thought the person who tied them up was leaving, but really they didn't leave and they were there, you know, so they could check on them or whatever. But it's a really tricky thing to write about. I think sex is a tricky thing to write about. And you, there, you know, you don't want to go on and on and on and on and sort of bore the reader, but you do want to give detail. And I think sometimes people give too much detail about the physical interaction and not about the emotional or mental interaction.
Sure. Well, let's bring on another caller.
Oh. Okay.
Calling in from Charlotte, I believe. Charlotte, North Carolina, are you there?
Oh, hi. I'm Heather Lynn.
Hi.
Hey, Heather.
Here you are.
It's funny because I haven't talked to most of you before, so I would not know your voice, but I'm happy to meet you on the phone.
Oh, yeah, ditto. Yeah, I know. My voice sounds way higher in real life than it does in my head, and I kind of hate it, but...
No, thank you for calling. We're just talking about erotica generally and also about, you know, the concept of short erotica. Can you tell readers, your story has the honor of being the first story in the book, and I particularly liked it because I'm a crossword fan. Can you kind of give a brief summary of what your story is about and maybe what inspired it?
Yeah, sure thing. And thank you so much. Yeah, I felt really... really honored to be not only in it, but the first story. It's kind of about just a girl who desperately needs a vacation. It says in the beginning that her mother started thinking that she's a lesbian or something because she's just not getting any action whatsoever. So she kind of goes on this vacation, runs into this guy who she thinks is doing paperwork, but it's actually a crossword puzzle. And when he asks her if she knows a seven-letter word for, what did I put it as? She said, if you...
Showing appreciation.
I'm showing appreciation, thank you. And she says fucking, because she's just that. She said not getting any eggs in, but, yeah, and then...
I love that, because it really draws you in to the story. You're like, wow, imagine if that happened in real life.
No, I know. But yeah, so
like it's like it draws you in. I like that, because it's after that, it's like, how could you stop reading after that line, you know, after she says fucking.
Well, thank you, yeah, definitely, but yeah, so she kind of goes into one of the cabins to get away from everything and pleasure herself, and she's hoping to never see that man again, but and then there's a wasp, and she needs someone to come, like, help her kill it, and he comes, and then they both come, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Well, I also like that it has vacation sex, because I think that's something that, you know, people can relate to and people fantasize about. And I think there is also the idea of, like, when you're on vacation, you might have less inhibitions than you would, you know, when you're at home. We were talking a little bit about earlier, and I'm curious to ask you, was writing to the 1,200 words or less limit a challenge for you, or did that come easily? What did you think when you started writing or before you started writing when you saw that? Because I think for some people that might be like, that might spur them on to say, oh, I could write 1,200 words. And for other people, you know, it might be like, oh, how could I tell a whole story in 1,200 words?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I did hear that part. Yeah, I mean, it came out longer than 1,200 words when I wrote it, and I had to cut it back some. But I think it was forthegirls.com. Their flash fiction limit is 500 words, so I've had to trim stuff down
wow.
to 500 words before.
Wow.
But
that's really
short. Went out of business. Yeah, they were 300 words. So it was hard, but I've had to do it before, and I like it because it's something that I can just do in one sitting. You know, it's like you get an idea, you write the idea, and then, you know, that's it. So.
I like the part where when you are cutting a story, you really see what words are essential and what aren't and how you can truncate something. And then I think what's left, even if you're the only person who knows that there was a before and after, I think that for me, I feel better about what's left. Like, I feel like I've really worked hard on it in those revisions, even if it's just cutting like 200 words. Because sometimes, you know, you feel like, oh, but I need all those. And then you kind of retool it and you say, oh, I didn't really need all those. But I think it's interesting because, like, I mean, I hope that it inspired people to say, oh, I can sit down and do this in one sitting. And I think it is definitely the kind of anthology where it seems to me that, you know, people had an idea for, like, a kind of maybe an unusual story, maybe something they wouldn't be able to draw out longer, or maybe they would. For me, I really liked being able to just have like the humorous stories and the kind of dirtier stories. And I put two humorous, well, yours isn't totally humorous, but, you know, like I put the two stories that really struck me as pretty unusual at the beginning and the end. I put yours, and then I put Vacation Pictures by Robert Peregrine at the end. And I've read that a few times at readings. And it's really fun because it's just so ridiculous. I'm going to read a tiny bit of it for you guys.
Yeah, go right ahead.
This is from Vacation Pictures by Robert Peregrine. Lorraine and I are back from our weekend in Maine. Hope you enjoy these snaps as much as we enjoyed taking them. Here's Lorraine in front of the bed and breakfast where we stayed, a large and beautiful Victorian, as you can see. And the inn was nice, too. Just joking, folks. Yes, that giant suitcase is just for the weekend. You know Lorraine likes to be prepared for anything. This is the proprietress of the B&B, a nice lady named Margot. Don't you love the beaded lanyard on her bifocals? Despite dressing like a schoolmarm, she's quite pretty, as you can see. And how old would you say? 36? The adorable calico cat is named Spammer. Margot says she named him that because he often leaves unwelcome messages in people's rooms. Watch your step. A peek inside the suitcase of toys that we brought for the weekend. Lots of rope and duct tape, of course. Obligatory magic wand vibrator. And I bet you can't guess where that foot-long black dildo is going to end up. You'll see later. And then the rest of the story narrates these pictures that they've taken that get increasingly dirtier. I thought that was a fun note to end on. But I'm curious, like, I liked hearing, you know, what you had to say about the word count, because I hello?
Oh, hi, I'm still here, yeah.
Hi.
Hello?
Hi. Is someone new here?
Don't think so.
Is Elizabeth and Heather? Okay. I heard someone talk.
I think there's some interference with somebody's line, but so we're getting the, like, Mexican radio going through.
Oh, do you think it's mine? You know what? Maybe I can call in.
I think it's all right. I think it just adds texture.
Technical difficulties. Sorry.
Someone's
is that getting better?
Yeah. It sounds good.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds better. I was like, oh, who's there? Secret. Like, it's kind of. It's cool that people can call in, but it's also a little unnerving because I don't know what people are going to say. What else? Well, and I don't want to put you guys on the spot, but I will. Did you guys have any particular favorites that you've read? You don't have to have read the whole book, but if you had one or two that you really liked and why, I would love to hear that.
Wow. Heather, you want to go first?
You can pass. No hardball questions.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm so bad at finding things when I have to look at a table of contents.
It's hard with this one especially because there's so many. Even I cannot, off the top of my head, remember them all.
Yeah, one that really sticks out in my mind is Jeremy Edwards' one, the No Blame, No Shame.
I really
enjoyed that one because, is it just me? But I feel like having to pee when you're close to an orgasm is a really common occurrence. I always like reading about real sex. Like, sometimes I feel like that's the difference between romance and erotica, is that erotica is real, and they get down and dirty, and romance is just kind of, I like writing and reading both, but, you know, romance is just kind of like, oh, it's all magical, and nobody ever farts, and it's fine. So that's what it really is about one, I guess.
This is going to sound like a total cop-out, but I honestly didn't find any I didn't like. But then again, as I said, many of the authors who were there were authors that I follow anyway. And the one
I
hadn't
been introduced
to before really coordinated well. So, I did like Jeremy's. I really did. I actually liked the voyeuristic angle of it, too. Because just kind of hooking into what Heather said, how often do you actually see something like that when it's actually convenient for you to sit there and watch? Or how often do you see something like that anyway, I guess?
And thank you. I didn't mean to malign, I didn't mean to say no one's going to like all the stories. I just meant that they're very varied. But I do think the voyeurism, I think that's something that, whether or not, I think that there's a common or a misconception. People sometimes think that, anything that you would like as a reader, you would actually like in real life. And I feel like while that those categories might overlap, it's not necessarily like, I don't know how I would react in some of the situations, here. If a census taker, even a really hot census taker came to my door, I don't necessarily know that I would actually want to fool around with them. And I think it would be weird if they were hitting on me or if I was a census taker and someone was hitting on me. But I think reading about it is really fun. And I think when people can incorporate real-life elements, like a real, setting or something familiar like the census taker, I think it adds to the fantasy elements because you've drawn them into a familiar place and then you're giving them something hot, I hope that made sense.
I know.
Yeah,
I think.
Well, I don't know if you set this up, specifically to segue into having Jeremy on, but I think he's on the line here.
I didn't, but hi, Jeremy.
I am on the line.
Did you hear us talking about you?
You know, I think I missed some of it, darn it, because I was switching between the delay that's on the website and the actual live feed on the phone. So, you know, my ears are burning.
Well, I have Heather Lynn and Elizabeth Daniels on, and I asked them if they can name a favorite story, and they both mentioned your story.
Oh, wow. Wow. Cool. I'm flattered and delighted. And the feeling
so welcome. And I want to ask you if you could briefly summarize, like tell us what your story is about and maybe read a paragraph or two to us.
Sure. Well, this is a voyeur story, but the twist on it, something that I like to write about is women who have erotic experiences when they pee or when they have to pee, because I think that the sensuality of that physiology and its potential for interacting with erotic sensations is a fascinating area. Now, in this case, she's taken by surprise by this because she hasn't planned anything like this, but she's on her way to the ladies' room, and suddenly she sees an irresistible voyeuristic opportunity. And I can just go right into the story. And this is written first person from the female protagonist's point of view, so we'll have to use our imaginations there. And as Elizabeth wrote, from a male point of view, so we're kind of evening it out here. And here we go. I'm on my way to the ladies' room when I spot them, Jessica and Peter, getting down and dirty in the conference center's little glass-doored library. And I don't blame them. I'd do Jessica and or Peter in a second if I ever got a chance. The next best thing has to be watching them do each other. And it looks like my beneficent bladder has escorted me straight into the path of the next best thing. The hotel designers have placed one of those ice machine alcoves directly opposite the diminutive library. And when I instinctively back myself into it, I can tell right away that the angles and lighting would make it difficult for me to be seen, whereas Jess and Pete are quite easily seen. And by the way, this is called No Blame, No Shame.
And that is the second story in the book. Well, I guess my first question is, I've been asking everyone, how did you find writing a 1,200-word or less story? Was it more challenging than writing longer pieces? Was it easier? And also, do you find it more challenging or less, or does it depend, writing from a female point of view versus a male point of view?
Stories in this length range tend to be easy for me. I think that I think small a lot of the time. So I think in terms of vignettes, in terms of moments even, just little moments where there's an interaction and there's a chemistry that happens, or a situation like this one I describe as a situation, you know, and then you spin it out and you get a story. And I do write a lot of longer stories, but that is not quite as easy as a shorter one, I would say, for me. But again, it has different challenges and different rewards, you know, when you can really develop the characters and really make a lot of things happen instead of just kind of small things happening. And
I think I know I asked you two questions and I'm interested.
Okay.
I think there are a lot of sort of extended moments in the book. And I think that it's really cool when someone can take a moment and then make it into a story, but still have the power, the erotic power of that moment, you know, where you're still, you know, sometimes like I've reread a certain section of a story because I just thought it was really well done. So I think that's a really good skill to have, to be able to both fixate on that moment and then, you know, flesh it out. So, okay, and then on to writing as a woman.
Oh, yes. It's one of those things where the story kind of dictates which way it's going to be, so I rarely have to even think about that. It would be hard, like for this story, it would have been harder to write it as a man. So I guess it just kind of comes naturally to find the point of view. You know, I'm kind of communing with the characters, if I'm allowed to be pretentious here, and the point of view kind of settles very early in the process of writing it.
No, I don't think it sounds pretentious. I mean, I think there does, at least for me, there reached a point where I was writing somewhat, not necessarily similar, but similar enough to each other's stories that I just couldn't write anymore like that, and I had to sort of branch out and both expand the viewpoint and try different tenses and try different, you know, genders and sexual orientations, because otherwise I think it can become challenging or impossible to write in the same voice over and over. For me, anyway, I'll just speak for myself. But I also think it's a good challenge. I sometimes teach erotic writing, and that is one of the things that I assign people to write a story from the point of view of someone who's a different gender than you or a different sexual orientation, because I think that really forces you to, if you have a tendency to write characters who are like you, to step out of that and sort of think about someone who is different in some ways, but I often find that that character might be different from you in some ways or from your typical character, but then there is also something in common that, you know, allows you to access their viewpoint. Elizabeth, what about you?
I think it really helps a lot. I have to play around sometimes with stories to try to get the correct point of view.
Yeah.
And every now and then, a story will throw me a twist. that's fun.
You mean you'll start it off as one point of view and then change it?
Right. It changes the whole story. But I do understand what you're talking about as far as kind of, you can kind of get into a rut for a while. I was doing some writing for an adult website that did BDSM, one particular type of BDSM. So I wrote quite a number of stories in that vein. And after a while, I had to say, love the environment, love the action, but I've got to write something different for a while, because you do kind of fall into a rut. No pun intended.
What was I thinking? I also have that with tense. Like, I'm often starting something in present tense, and then I start going into past tense, and then I have to figure out which one I want to keep it in, and that can be really hard, because it's like part of the story works in one and part of the story works in another, and I don't know which is the best one. And it's really, I would say it's kind of a pain to go edit something into another tense. It's not a barrel of laughs. So I would recommend, if you're writing anything fiction, you know, and, you know, pick your tense, and I would say stick with it. And then, you know, unless you really see that it's not working, because trying to go back and catch all the tense changes is just, to me, that sort of sucks the fun out of writing. It's so frustrating.
Or first person versus third person, that's a dilemma sometimes.
Yeah. And I think sometimes you know right away, but sometimes you don't know until you start writing. And I guess in some ways that's a good thing. I mean, you can always change it until you are sending it to someone. But yeah.
Plus, that's what an editor's for, right, Rachel?
Well, see, the thing is, I would never like see a story. I guess I wouldn't say, oh, I like the story, but could you make it past tense or could you make it third person? Because I feel like I know the nightmare that would be to do that. I would more ask, like, the kinds of revisions I tend to ask for are much more minute. They're like, can you flesh this out, or I didn't understand this. I also think it's hard for the person. I find it hard. I'm not the kind of editor who can look at someone else's work or even my work and then, like, conceptualize a whole ship change like that. I don't know. But I do think stories can be written. I mean, the same story could be written from someone else's point of view or from a different tense, and it would change the story, and that's kind of up to the authors. And I think some people can do various points of view, and some people are just really good at a certain type of point of view. But I do like that there's a good amount of third person in this book, just because I think first person can get challenging when you're reading it over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's bring in a different point of view, welcoming our last caller here, D.L. King. Are you on the air?
Hi.
Yeah, hi, I am. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. We're on with Jeremy Edwards, Heather Lynn, and Elizabeth Daniels. Welcome.
Ah, cool. I recognize Jeremy's voice, but this is the first time I'm hearing Heather Lynn and sorry, who was the other woman?
Elizabeth Daniels.
Elizabeth Daniels. Hi.
Me too. DL, can I ask you both to tell us a little bit about like a brief summary of your story and to read a paragraph or two? And also, since I know you write a lot of erotica, was it more challenging for you to write in this 1,200 words or less word count, or was that easier, or what was your take on that?
Well, sometimes it's actually really easy for me to write something that's a real short like this. If I know before I sit down to write that my target word count is going to be 1,000 words or 1,200 words, then I will tailor my story to fit it. If I'm just left to my own devices and I'm just writing, I generally write, most of my stories end up being around 3,500 words, I guess, 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all kind of my headspace. It's like if I tell myself this is what I want to do, then that's what I sit down to do. And I think it's a lot of fun to write really short pieces sometimes. It's challenging to get, you know, to come up with believable characters and make the reader understand the plot and the story and what's going on, and also get some really good sex in. Just like a bad
word. It's a lot to do. It's a lot that the 1,200 words have to do. Can you tell us a little bit about your story, Punishment, Visiting the Crime, and if there's any if there was a specific inspiration for it? I know anyone who's a library patron will certainly enjoy it.
Yeah, I have a few friends.
I say someone with a lot of late fees.
or someone who's looking for something special in the library, maybe. but yes, as you say, it is a library story, and people who know me know that I'm pretty kinky, and so it's a kinky library story. And I have a bunch of friends who are librarians, and these kinds of things never actually seem to happen in the library, but they all kind of wish that they would. Most of my librarian friends usually talk about chasing children through the stacks to make them stop running around and that kind of thing. So it's usually kind of boring. In this particular story, though, this is about a librarian who takes returning books on time very seriously. And she has ways of dealing with people. And I do have actually a paragraph that I could read that,
yes,
I think,
please,
people get the idea from. Okay.
Thank you, yeah.
Sure. It seemed the rumors might actually be true. Ted had been working on finding out for himself for quite a while now. He'd been diligently bringing books back late ever since that friend of Frank's had brought it up at the poker game. He said that bitch of a head librarian punishes guys who break the library rules. He'd said that he heard she actually spanked some guy for bringing his books back late. He said it like it was a bad thing. Everybody laughed and made lewd remarks. That was all right. They weren't the library type. He'd have been surprised if they read much more than the back of the cereal box or the sports page. But he couldn't stop thinking about it. He began to fantasize about what kinds of punishment Ms. Carmichael might mete out to guys who didn't follow the rules, and now he was going to find out.
Okay. I think I like, I like the specifics of the story, but I also like the setting, because I think there is something, if you're into books and you're into libraries, you know, and you meet other people who, I mean, whether it's like that scenario you described or just other patrons, I think there is something sexy, I think, also about bookstores, just being surrounded by books and book people, that can be hot. And, you know, whether you're into the same kinds of books or not or whatever. So I think that's something that, and I think that is sadly kind of a subset of people, probably not the people listening to, a talk about books, but
I think that readers are not necessarily, you know, there's a lot of people who don't read. And when I meet those people, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, how can you not read?
I know. There are people who don't understand the wonder of books. And there is a lot of wonder to books. It's books are sexy and books are mysterious and books are exciting, and being in a place that's filled with books can be, I mean, you know, I guess I'm geeky, but I'm just saying the library is a pretty wonderful place, actually.
And I really like in your story and in a few of the other stories, you know, the setting is almost its own character. You know, the setting is a major component of what makes the story work and why the people are there. And I think that is something that's a setting is another prompt that I sometimes use when I'm stuck. I'll think about an interesting setting for a story because I think I think we think of, not necessarily us on this call, but people think of like sex as something that happens in a bedroom, and there's nothing wrong with a bedroom, but especially when you're reading story after story, if they're all set in a bedroom, like even if they're different, it can get a little, you know, just monotonous. So I think anytime people can spice it up with a different kind of setting and eroticize that setting and say why that character is so into that setting and how that setting fits in with the rest of the story, I approve of that.
That's a part of the fun, don't you think, Rachel? You know, to come up with some really different kind of setting and come up with a way that it can be sexy and it can be a place where, you know, something naughty occurs.
And I think I had been talking with Elizabeth earlier about research, and she had used a food website as inspiration. I think especially with the internet, I mean, there's definitely some settings where you would want to do more research if you've never been there, but, you know, travel locations or just, you know, iconic buildings or iconic settings, like you can read about people who've been to these places and, you know, or if you've been to somewhere that just struck you, I think that can be a way to kickstart a story and just give it its own uniqueness because, you know, maybe you're having sex in, I don't know where. I mean, the first thing that popped into my head was the Empire State Building. But, you know, somewhere that people recognize. Another thing I have people do is, when I teach erotic writing, is set a story. If I'm traveling, I'll say, set your story somewhere that everyone who lives in this city would know. And I don't always know those locations because maybe I haven't been to, like this happened in Toronto, but it was something that also broke the ice because people who do live there, you know, were like, oh, that's funny, you know, and maybe they know someone who did something there or they've passed by there. I think it's harder when you're trying to reach a mass audience who might not know about, you know, if you're in a smaller town, but I think there are enough places or like a library, that's something that, you know, every town hopefully has. I was going to say every town has. I don't know if every town has a library
anymore.
But it's something that people know what it is and are familiar with. Did anyone else do any interesting research or not even necessarily about Gotta Have It, but, you know, have you done any, found any unusual things in your erotic writing?
Let's take one more because we're down to about a minute remaining.
Oh, okay.
And then... so,
okay. Does someone want to take this quickly? Research?
I don't know. I know that I couldn't write at all if I didn't have the internet. Like, I've tried, and it's really hard because I'm always looking on, like, dictionary.com or Wikipedia or something.
I think the internet is really such a helpful tool. Especially when you're stuck, you can, like, Google image search whatever you want.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll just continue the rest of this next time. But for those of you that are just tuning in, the book is Gotta Have It, 69 Stories of Sudden Sex, edited by Rachel Kramer Bussell, out now in Cleus Press. And we want to thank our guest contributors, Elizabeth Daniels, Heather Lynn, Jeremy Edwards and D.L. King. If you go to goodreads.com and type in Rachel Kramer Bustle Online Book Club, you'll be able to find us, and we'll talk to you all next week. Thank you so much for everybody calling in. It's been great talking.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
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 So wait.
Left you on a debris.